This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to a Monday edition of the OBP, the Orange Bloods podcast here on the Yak, otherwise known as the Aftermath. I don't know why I like to do FM radio DJ guy or like commercial monster truck guy, the Aftermath. But it is something that I've coined because I was told that I use the word aftermath too much by our producer here at the Yak. So I just decided, you know what, Ross, I'm going to go with it. I say it a lot. Let's just make it the Monday show. A lot of stuff to get to. The Longhorns victorious over the weekend in an absolutely fascinating game in Lubbock. There will be lots of discussion, certainly, in the podcast today about what happened there. A lot of Sam Ehlinger discussion and some crazy stats that I found over the weekend as it relates to the Texas defense and what they've been up against. And I had some of it in my 10 thoughts from the weekend over at orangebloods.com, but I will discuss some of it here in the podcast because I think it the platform just gives me a better chance to kind of piece out the numbers and pull them apart and stretch them out in a way that I think provides for fuller context, given that you got to be careful not to get too nerdy numbers with the written word in an article like my 10 thoughts. By the way, special shout out to our guys, our partners, our title sponsor over at the Orange Bloods podcast here on the Yak. The guys over at Texas Card House, 183 Anderson Mill, the state of Texas's premier private poker club. You can play cash games, tournament games. They've got a monster $250,000 tournament coming up later this month. Go to texascardhouse.com. Check out all of the details there. But they open up at noon. It's going to be like Vegas soon. It's going to be 24 hours a day. I believe there may be a new location coming at some point. Dallas, Houston, they're coming for you too at some point. So, yeah, thanks to our guys over at the Texas Card House. They have turned into one of our most awesome partners on orangebloods.com. We do love them so, and I actually love me some poker. Just being a married man with four-year-old twins doesn't allow me to play as much as I used to, but God help me if this place had been open back in 2005. Oh, so where do we start today? I think we have to start with the events that took place on social media on Sunday, and this one is a weird one. This is one of these things that I'm glad that I'm doing a podcast and I can kind of talk about my life and how weird it can be sometimes. Sundays are work days for me, more so than any day of the week, because writing the 10, I take a lot of pride in my 10 thoughts from the weekend. I don't know that I would say that it's 10 columns wrapped inside of one, but it's not too far from that. There's a lot that goes into it during the season. It's almost always a Sunday production. And on a weekend when there are games, that's definitely the case because a lot of what I would otherwise use for material in my 10 thoughts from the weekend probably go into my instant analysis right after a game. And I do make a point not to repeat myself too much from column to column. That's pretty lazy stuff in general. So Sundays are work days for me. It gives me a hell of an excuse to be able to watch the NFL all day while uninterrupted. For instance, I just went to Pluckers yesterday, sipped on a glass of water, and watched all of the NFL while I worked on the column for about 3 or 4 hours. But yesterday was a special day. Yesterday, there was a birthday party at Urban Air. I don't know if you guys have ever been to this place. I've never personally been to Urban Air until yesterday. But there was a kid's birthday party. My twins, who were 4, were invited. And my wife was like, hey, can you go to Urban Air with me? And, you know, because I can be a man and, you know, stubborn, I originally was of the opinion, no. I go to a lot of kids' birthday parties. It's Sunday. It's a big work day for me. I have work to do. I'm going to need you to do that by yourself. But my wife implored me to make an exception. Can you come to the party this time? She's like, because Urban Air is a scary place to have 2 4-year-olds, because it's not like other places where, you know, you couldn't just sneak in and sneak out and grab a kid. Seriously, you could go to Urban Air and have a kid abducted. They're just not security measures in place. And so as soon as we got there, like, I got it, man. There are kids swinging from the ceiling. It is like a warehouse of kids doing, I'm not going to use the metaphor that I was about to use. It is a madhouse. And we get to the birthday party. And so, you know, when you're a dad and you're at a birthday party, you're checking your score, your phone for your fantasy scores. You're doing various things. And I probably overuse it's work, honey, right? Like if I'm on my phone and I start to get the side eye because I seem distracted, you know, I probably play the, honey, it's work. I'm sorry. I have to do this. I probably play that card a little too much when looking at my phone when I'm out with my wife. It is one of the get out of jail cards that comes with owning a website like orangebloods.com. I do have to stay connected to the world to a certain degree, but yesterday was a special set of circumstances. And I'm at a kid's birthday party yesterday. By the way, happy birthday to Ryan. And shout out to Ryan's mom who put on a fantastic party. Well done. I was at a kid's 4-year-old birthday party yesterday when the Zach Smith tweets started. And my phone started to buzz. And on Sundays in the afternoon, I don't typically, like, that's the least. Most anybody who knows me knows, just leave me alone on Sundays. Because I genuinely just wrap myself up in work. And so most people know, like, hey, just don't bother me on a Sunday. My phone just started buzzing. And I had a text message from someone connected to University of Texas Athletics. Someone's name most of you listening would probably know. And they were like, hey, man, what do you think about what's happening? What are your thoughts? And I didn't know what he was talking about. And then he's like, he's like, Zach Smith's on Twitter again. You need to check that out. So I pull out my phone and I see the first Zach Smith tweet. And I'm like, oh. You know, it took a second for everything to click in that, well, this is happening. This is happening. This is real. It's ongoing. And the thing that stood out immediately was it wasn't like he came out and just dropped a social media bomb. Zach Smith came out yesterday with a flamethrower. It was social media flamethrowing. It was cheated on his wife with an Iowa State chick here and snorting coke off of a stripper's body there and infidelity and all kinds. It was nonstop. His screenshots. You know, okay, cool, hook him. Tom Herman's response to Zach Smith when Zach Smith threatened him on through text messages is now in the vernacular, right? It's now in the sphere. It will be on t-shirts. That's all happening. And my wife is looking at me like, get off your phone. I'm like, honey, I can't get off my phone. I told her, there's some shit going on at work. And she just wasn't having it. She's like, it's a birthday party. They're serving cake. Get off your phone. And I was like, honey, seriously, there's some stuff going down at work. I have to deal with this. And she's like, well, what's going on? And I was like, I can't talk about this in a room full of 4-year-olds. They're singing happy birthday, babe. I'm sorry. Like, this is happening. But I can't. I got to go out in the hallway. She's like, you need to put that thing away. And I was like, no. And I think I finally conveyed to her without telling her what was going on. Seriously. I know I use it's work excuse a lot. This is not normal. This is serious. And so I went out into the hallway of Urban Air and I'm sorting through the text and my jaw's just like, oh, good grief. It just drops, not all the way down to the floor. There was really nothing. Here's the thing. All of the stuff that Zach Smith posted on Twitter yesterday with stuff that behind the scenes Zach Smith has been throwing around for a long time. Zach Smith went to national media outlets with all of these accusations and was like, write a story. I've got the goods. And every single national publication that he went to was like, man, we don't want no part of this. No, not us. You know, ESPN, SI, whomever, like all of them had heard about this because I've heard about this. This is stuff we don't talk about on message boards. I don't tell you guys everything that I hear, but all of this stuff, the massage parlor stuff, the strip club stuff, this is all stuff that has been discussed behind the scenes to some degree for a couple of months now, going back to when Zach Smith first lost his mind on Twitter because he's an abuser and abusers do things like not act with full thought. So these things have been out there. They've been whispered and talked about in private conversations among people in the University of Texas Athletic Department for a while now. So a lot of you finally found out what Zach Smith has been trying to get the national media to write about. Surprise! And it happened all day yesterday. And it's a layered conversation. It's a layered conversation. I think my first thought, the only thought I truly have that I care about is that for most of this stuff, look, Zach Smith is an abuser of women. He beat his wife. He beat his wife mentally and physically. She had to get restraining orders on him. He clearly has, to me, Zach Smith is exactly the kind of guy that ends up shooting up a place at some point. He checks all of the boxes, right? Abuser of women. Almost every single mass murderer is someone who at one point has had the law called on them because they couldn't control themselves around women. Almost every time. His life is spiraling out of control. He cannot control his emotions. Add in, he might. All of those other three things we all know to be true. He is a beater, a woman abuser. He is someone whose life is spiraling out of control. And he is unable to control his emotions. All of that is verified truth. Now, add in the fact that it was impossible to read that without thinking all that stuff yesterday without thinking, oh man, home dude's on a bender of some variety. Maybe he was sober as a judge. Maybe that's the way Zach Smith rolls when he's sober, which is scary to think about, frankly. Like the idea that he's abusing some sort of something would at least, you know, he was drinking. You know how it is. You drink, you got all that stuff rolled into one, and that happens. But maybe he was sober. But I would leave open the possibility that he was not. And if you add that with that other stuff, like Zach Smith is a danger to everybody that he knows. Think about how he's treated his wife, and think about the damage, the lasting forever damage to his kids that he just doesn't give a fuck about. This is a guy that takes a picture of him and his little girls and uses it as a shield of evidence. I didn't do this to my wife. Look at me. I've got daughters. That's the type of thing that shitbag men do. So with that as a backdrop, I feel awful for Michelle Herman today. She's a victim today. The guy who abuses his wife basically used Michelle Herman as collateral damage to try to get back at her husband. And, you know, if it means, and understand this, who is Michelle Herman? Michelle Herman is a woman who befriended another woman who is being abused by a man. And she's, even after they moved apart, even after they weren't living in the same town anymore, they remained friends. All she did was try to help her friend get out of an incredibly dangerous situation. That is Michelle Herman's crime. Her crime is that she tried to be a good person to a friend. But you know how shitbag men think about things. F her. Stay out of your business. As if, now bear with me here, as if any of us who would be friends with somebody who was in an abusive relationship would look at that and say, mind our own business, not our business. What the hell is it good to have a friend? What good is it to have good friends if the good friends can't be there when you need help the most? And that's who Michelle Herman was. As far as I can tell, all she's ever tried to do is be a good person to Zach Smith's wife. And she paid the punishment for it yesterday. One man seeking revenge against another man and not caring if the collateral damage is a woman. And look, without getting into the specifics of the story, because a lot of this is really Tom Herman and Michelle Herman's personal business, I make the following comment because I think it acknowledges a couple of things, but also pays the proper amount of respect to what's going on here. I don't think Tom Herman is an innocent man. I don't know that he did everything that Zach Smith said he did, but Tom Herman was a bit of a wildcat when he was a younger guy. Surprise! Like, look, let's just call it what it is. He was a guy that was a bit of a hard charger as a partier. But I think from what my understanding of their relationship is, Tom Herman is now 43 years old? He's not the same guy that he was at 32 and 33 before, you know, before he had kids. And look, man, I was at a 4-year-old's birthday party yesterday. I didn't do that shit 10 years ago. Like, your life changes. And my anticipation is that whatever Tom and Michelle have to work through as it relates to any of this stuff, I feel, from what I understand, like they've worked through it. They're married. Michelle is ride or die with Tom. However, never think that because a woman and a man have come to grips with an assortment of behaviors, right? Like they work through that on their pride. And it's none of our business. It's none of our business. What's true, what's not. When it happened, when did she, like that, it's none of our business. That's for them to work through. It's one of the reasons why you really won't hear me specifically talking about any one thing that Zach Smith said, other than just a minute ago listing the wild examples of things that were out there. That's their stuff. What I would say is that you don't know women, and you don't know people. This idea that, and I've seen this from a few people on Orange Bloods today that, hey, Michelle will be okay. She's a strong woman. She's not going to let anything like this, you know, upset her, as if only because you think she's a strong woman, only a weak woman would let, or a weak person. You know, everybody on Orange Bloods loves the stories when teachers hook up with teenagers, right? Here's another one. And it's always in Texas or Florida, it seems like. Here's another one. And then everybody posts the photos and wants to check out how hot the teacher is. You know, men view these stories through ways that women do not. I promise you, a woman never hears about another woman sleeping with a teenage boy and thinks to herself, I wonder how hot they were. Like, that's not typically how women are wired. Men, on the other hand, let's go find her Facebook page. See what photos we can find. Would not. Right? So these stories occur and men love to talk about them. But usually there's a man. Usually there's a boyfriend, a husband, and that's his wife or his fiance or his girlfriend. And she just had sex with a 14-year-old boy and is arrested for it. And you've just found out that she's been writing love notes and all of these things. Now, in the minds of men and the way they project their thoughts towards women, the thought would be, well, if this guy is strong mentally, then this won't bother him. And since I know Joe and Joe's strong mentally, this won't bother him. He's fine. We don't talk about like mental health transparently enough for that type of logic to be used. Because any man who's dating a woman who's over the age of 18, you're married, you got wife and kids, and your wife is having an affair with a teenager and she's in jail, you'll forgive me if I don't think it's weak-minded if that guy's devastated. Devastated. A, because it happened, but B, everybody I know now knows that happened. And you can't leave the house. You can't have a conversation with a friend. Forget about them bringing it up. Every time they look at you, you have to feel like they're thinking about that. And that had been my concern for Michelle Herman when this thing first popped up at the very beginning of the season. She and Tom can be good with the past. They can't have moved on. It doesn't change the fact that Michelle Herman, almost 1,000,000% certainty, was embarrassed yesterday. And I think the things behind the scenes that you'd hear when this stuff was being discussed, like how postal is Zach Smith in terms of like, YOLO, I'm going to say whatever. Like the fear was that stuff like this would get out. And if you're Michelle Herman, man, you just don't want your friends and family to know all of this. That's y'all's business. That's y'all's business. Let's assume for a second that the thing in the script club with the alleged, let's just assume that happened. Let's just assume that Michelle and Tom or Joe and Jenny or whomever, right? Two imaginary people. Let's assume imaginary married couple go to that type of club. They don't want mom to know that. I've been to a strip club with my wife before, but I've never gone and then the next day called everybody I know. Like, hey, can you get Heather's mom on the phone? I gotta tell her about what we did. So it's naive and honestly dangerous to not understand that what happened yesterday was a bomb dropped on Michelle Herman's life. Tom too. But while Tom is a victim in this, certainly, Michelle Herman's the biggest victim today. She's the collateral damage in Zach Smith's attempt to bring down his ex-friend, who he blames for his fucked up life. It's Tom. My wife left me because of Tom. Not because he hit her, not because he mentally made her life a living hell. It's Tom Herman and Michelle Herman's fault. I mean, Zach Smith probably ain't ever going to figure it out. And Zach Smith's probably not going to have a happy ending. I think the hope has to be whatever his unhappy ending is, he didn't make anybody else unhappy. I feel for Zach Smith's ex-wife. I feel for his kids the most. I mean, they're not at the age yet to understand this, but there will come a day. There are internet archives. Believe me, look, my kids one day are going to be old enough. They're going to be able to do a web search on their dad, and they're going to think their dad is racist because I made some smart-ass comment about the people from Mississippi being racists. God help me when my kids get old enough to do an internet search. Daddy, what explained this? Well, Daddy was actually being racist against the white people who were racist, but because nobody looks at nuance, like that's my future life in the future. My kids, when they're old enough, will get on the internet, they'll do a search of my name, and they'll find really horrible things. That's what like my horrible things aren't really horrible, but they're horrible to me. They're haunting to think that one day my kids, I'll be able to explain it to them, but what if they're made fun of at school? What if, you know, they're 10 years old and other 10-year-olds don't view the world through a healthy prism? Like everything I do is part of like what comes with being a public figure to a certain extent. So I look at this situation, man, and I look at Zach Smith's kids, and I'm haunted for him because he's leaving behind. Look, I don't have a relationship with my dad, but I can do an internet search on my dad, and he's an incredibly successful person. He may be a dick. I don't think I like him personally, but there's no question that he's probably the single most successful person I know. He is incredibly successful. He's like a billionaire, self-made man. And so I can do an internet search on him, and it's like, oh, cool. Well, my dad may not actually like me, but as a human being, like, I know who he is. And, you know, you can still take a little piece of pride that, like, where you come from may not be, like, good people, but they're accomplished people. You know? I don't know that Zach Smith's kids have that. So I feel awful for them, and I feel awful for his ex-wife for the abuse that she went through and the fact that her life will remain complicated forever until her kids are grown up. And even then, you know, people have parent issues for a long time because of things just like this. And then I look at Michelle Herman, and I feel for her today. Forgive me. All of my compassion goes to someone who, as far as I can tell, has only been a good person. So that's that. I don't think this is going to be a deal with the University of Texas when this stuff was, like, I specifically spoke to a high level University of Texas official back in August about this. And we spoke about the very specific things that Zach Smith tweeted yesterday. I spoke to a senior Texas official about this 3 months ago because all of this stuff was out there behind the scenes. And from what I was told, this was in the past. This was when he was, this is several coaching stops ago. It's almost another lifetime to a certain degree. And there are no NCAA violations that were broken. If everything that Zach Smith said was true, none of it is against NCAA rules. It might make Tom Herman a bad husband, but that's personal. That is, if you're going to start firing guys because they're bad husbands, there ain't going to be a lot of people working at the University of Texas or any university in the country. I don't know if we know this, but, like, it is a fraternity that enables terrible behavior by and large. You don't want to know what these assistant coaches do when they're on the road with nothing to do. And, like, imagine, you guys just, if you don't think that the things, if you don't think infidelity and you don't think strip clubs and you don't think these things happen, you're just not paying attention. There's just like a level of you being naive that honestly is bad for you. All these guys are God-fearing Christian men. All these dudes, for the most part, are not the type of guys that you want watching your kids. But they can coach football. Like, that's why they have jobs. And as far as I can tell, unless something has changed, no NCAA violation. Because remember, one of the original stories was that Tom and Zach took some high school coaches to a strip club. And that, if I'm not mistaken, Zach Smith used a company credit card. Or I can't remember what it was. It was so many accusations ago. I don't remember exactly what that thing was. But when we spoke about that, again, it was, are there any violations? Did he break any NCAA rules? And all of this stuff suggests that Tom needs to kiss Michelle Herman's ass forever, if true. But UT is not going to step in. Just my sense of things. And so that makes it somewhat of a dead issue. I think Tom Herman will be asked about it today at his press conference. I think he will give a no comment, and I think people will move on. And Zach Smith will be very frustrated that the shelf life on this story probably doesn't last 24 hours. On to the football side of things. That turned into like a dissertation of sorts, but I think that the conversation was needed because I think that I don't want to be one of those guys that we see. I don't want to be TexAgs. I don't want to be these other websites where when the shit hits the fan, it's like, oh, we're just not going to talk about that. There are other websites. There are websites in the Texas market that are deleting every thread about this situation that pops up. And I think they're doing it under the cover of, you know, protection. But no, man, let's be grownups. This has happened. Yesterday happened. Let's not put our head in the sand and in the name of respecting everybody, like not acknowledge that this is a thing. It's unfortunate, but it's a thing. And I, full transparency, you know, people have always asked, what would you do if the Baylor scandal happened at Texas? You'd protect Texas, wouldn't you? Man, if you guys don't know me by now, my hope would be that I would display what I think is character, ethos, unbending. Like, I'd like to think that I've reached a point in my life as a 42-year-old man with enough awareness and knowledge about how all of these things go down. If Texas ever gets themselves involved into a rape scandal, you're subscribing to the wrong website if you think I won't call that out. I call bad behavior bad behavior. And I've had bad behavior. I make mistakes. And I'd like to think that part of growing up, man, is being able to talk and acknowledge your mistakes. Be better for it. When I tell you, everybody always, be better. Man, that is my life code. People sometimes on Orange Bloods will get upset at me and they're like, be better. That's not an insult. Be better is my life code. Every day, be better than you were yesterday. In every facet, grow, be a better husband, a better father, a better listener, a better learner, a better worker, a better friend. Every day, every day. It is not a bad code. Every man's got to have a code. Isn't that what Omar from The Wire said? That's my code, be better. And I would really be ashamed of myself. And I would have a hard time. If Texas ever finds itself embroiled in like really ugly things, and it never has, I've been really lucky other than, you know, when everybody in the department was sleeping together at one point or another, but I didn't protect anybody back then either. I didn't protect Major when he was sleeping and having an affair with a student trainer. Fuck that. Like, be better. All of us. And that goes for that, everything that was going on in the athletic department as it related to people, you know, having all kinds of wild and crazy stories because the track coach moved in with one of her athletes, you know, the whole Bev Kearney thing, like nobody got protected in that. It was ugly for everybody. Cleve Bryant, he was an asshole and his behavior was out of control and nobody protected him either. Hell. Mac Brown's probably the nicest guy that will ever work at the University of Texas. And there were times when he was a jerk to me. And like, you know, I called out Mac for what Mac was. He's a great dude, but he's a man. And we are all flawed. Excuse me. Probably shouldn't laugh. Be better, Jeff. Don't laugh at the reality of the flawed nature of men in general. But even Mac has flaws. For all of his strengths, Mac has some flaws. And I have flaws. So, anyway. Sam Ellinger's playing great football. And coming out of the Texas Tech game. How about that for a segue, by the way? Thanks, Sam, for playing so well. I can use you as a segue. My lasting thought from Saturday night. Sam Ellinger is keeping this team afloat. If Sam, here's the thing about Sam that I don't know that enough people have enough appreciation for. He's still a true sophomore. His evolution as a player is happening in fast forward motion. Where what he's doing right now is more than I think you should be able to realistically expect of a guy who didn't get a redshirt year, who's had to deal with injuries, who, you know, the personnel issues didn't seem to be completely fixed going into the season. Like, if Sam Ellinger just made improvements off a year ago, cut back on the turnovers, and was just rock solid, a 6.5 or 7 out of 10, I think that would have been really monumental progress. It would be the kind of thing that would make you go, okay, he took a step forward from freshman to sophomore year as he gets ready to enter junior and senior years. I think it's completely within the realm of expectations to say that guy will keep getting better. When he's a junior and a senior, watch out. that he's a sophomore and performing, look, against Oklahoma, he was better than Kyler Murray. Against West Virginia, he was better than Will Grier. Against, I don't know that Jet Duffy is the bar, but he was exceptional this weekend. When the moment has called for Sam Ellinger to be fantastic this season, he's answered the bell. Sam's worst games have actually occurred in games where the expectations were that the team would just blow the other team out, right? Like, not incredible against Kansas State, not incredible against USC. He was solid against USC, but I think a sub 50% completion performance. What Sam's done the last 2 weeks, because after the Oklahoma State game, I said, look, Sam played well on Saturday night. Might have been one of the best players that Texas had on the field against Oklahoma State in a loss. But going against West Virginia, going up against Texas Tech, who at the time we thought their starting quarterback Bowman would be healthy, going against Iowa State, if Texas is going to have a successful season, if Texas is going to play in the Big 12 championship game, Sam Ellinger can't be just good. Sam Ellinger's got to take it up a notch. And you know what's happened in the last two games? He's put together quarterback ratings of 179 and 180. It is in the modern history of the Texas football program. Let's just say last 20 years, right? Because that's when offenses, like, I don't know that James Street could ever put together a 180 passing performance, because the passing is just different now than it would have been a generation ago. In the modern era of the Texas football program, from Mack Brown on, only twice in the history of the program has a quarterback put together back-to-back games of 175-plus ratings. Colt McCoy did it once, and to Colt's credit, he did it at the end of the 2008 season against Texas A&M and Ohio State in back-to-back games. That's baller. I think when I think about Colt McCoy, I know he had that MVP performance in the Fiesta Bowl, right? But I typically think of the best play that Colt McCoy ever had as a player in that month of October, in that stretch of football where they played Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and Missouri and then eventually Texas Tech, like ranked team, ranked team, ranked team, ranked team. He was phenomenal, like the team was. But when you go back and you think, like, wow, he did that against A&M and Ohio State. Kudos. Vince Young did that one time in back-to-back games against Kansas and Baylor. What Sam did this weekend and the past two weekends, one in a loss and one in a win, is perform at a level that in the modern era of Texas football history has been done twice before. Basically, once every 5 to 10 years, Texas gets quarterback performances like Sam has done in back-to-back weeks. So understand that, and Sam Ellinger hasn't thrown an interception since Maryland. He'll regress to the mean to a certain degree at some point. Like next year, he'll throw 5 interceptions and it'll feel like, oh my God, what's happened to Sam? Well, he's not perfect. And Sam's had a couple of interceptions during this stretch that, you know, defenders have dropped. But by and large, he's just taken amazingly careful. His approach has been amazing in terms of taking care of the football. It really has been. And then, you know, on the other side of the ball, what's interesting is that Texas has been able to get from Sam Ellinger a much improved level of play, while the defense, for the most part, has been playing what's the opposite of murderer's row, right? If the 27 Yankees were the murderer's row, what's the opposite of that? Because for much of this season, Texas has had the benefit of terrible quarterback play for the opposing teams. And for the first, six games of the season, 5 of the first 6 quarterbacks they played had quarterback ratings this season less than 130 coming into the season. That's awful. That's what Sam was doing a year ago when everybody was like, we got to get better quarterback play. That's what Shane Buechele did when everybody was saying, we got to get a quarterback. Those are Case McCoy level numbers. Basically, those are the numbers of every quarterback that's played for Texas for the last decade, going back to Colt McCoy with that 2012 year, the aberration where David Ash had a really strong sophomore year. I this program has gotten lucky. It hasn't always been that way, right? There have been the last few years, it felt like everybody had a quarterback, right? Last year, they take on Baker Mayfield. They take on Sam Darnold. They take on Will Greer, even though they knocked Will Greer out of the game. You know, Oklahoma State, you go through the entire conference, everybody had a quarterback. Everybody they played had a quarterback. This year, and part of why you thought that Todd Orlando did such a great job a year ago was that defense played really well against really good quarterbacks. Really good quarterbacks. And yet this year, it's kind of been the opposite. And so what people keep saying, well, what's wrong with the Texas defense? What's happened? Well, what's happened is they've stopped playing shitty quarterbacks. Simple as that. You know, I mean, Kyler Murray's really, really good, and Texas can't deal with really, really good quarterbacks. That's their sin. You give Texas a bad quarterback like Sean Robinson, they'll eat his lunch all day. But Will Greer, Kyler Murray, Taylor Cornelius, and then this weekend was probably their true aberration because they haven't let a guy like Jet Duffy do them dirty all season. They've taken guys with his peripherals coming into the game, looking like a weak passer, does scare you as a runner. I don't know that Texas has played a lot of guys quite like that, but they haven't let a guy with terrible quarterback numbers light them up this year. That's the truth. I broke down the data. Texas has been actually surprisingly good against most of the quarterbacks on their schedule in terms of forcing them into numbers that were less than what they came in with or less than the totality of the rest of their season. Did the same with Will Greer. Like, as good as Will Greer was, if you can believe it, Will Greer's season numbers are exponentially larger than what he did against Texas at DKR. It sounds crazy because they scored, you know, 40 plus points and won the game, but like, that's how good Will Greer's been. This Texas defense, we have enough of a sample size to know Iowa State's going to have some success against the Texas defense this weekend. Purdy is pretty good. He's played six games, and all but one, he's been lights out good. And the one game where he wasn't lights out good, he was still really good. They have a scary receiver. So, you know, Texas would probably have to play its best game of the season to limit Iowa State offensively, although Iowa State isn't an explosive offense. I think this is a week where I don't expect both teams to get to 30. And 28 probably wins you the game this week. I think we're probably talking about a 28-24 kind of game, and I think it's a coin flip. Like, I don't know who to pick in this game. Because Iowa State legitimately has a great offense or a great defense, and they've got, you know, Purdy's been playing at least as good as Sam Ellinger's been playing. Believe it or not, like, it's crazy. He's a true freshman. Eventually, I got into an argument with Arlong 38 about this on Orange Bloods over the weekend. Like, at some point, surely he'll regress to the mean because everybody regresses to the mean. But I would say this about Sam: Sam hasn't played a defense as good as the one that he'll play this weekend all season. It's not even close. I don't even know what the second best defense that Texas has played this season. What is the best defense? Kansas State doesn't have the best defense that Sam's played, right? Surely not. They're awful. And USC's defense wasn't any good, but they've got talent. They got guys that'll eventually be NFL players. So this is a big test. It's a big test for Sam. Because Sam's been doing against defenses and defenders wearing roller skates for the last 10 games. I'm really excited to kind of see how Sam performs against a real defense. Because I think how he performs against Iowa State will be really revealing towards how would Sam perform against Michigan or Alabama or Clemson or even Texas A&M. Like, you find these defenses that have strong suits. You know, A&M at one point recently, the number one run defense in the country, which, you know, that doesn't completely affect Sam too much because they do give up plays by the yard in the passing game. But in general, with better defensive play, how would Sam look? It's the one thing about this season that I can't answer. Because Sam legitimately hasn't played a good defense all season. Texas hasn't. It's part of the reason why they're 7-3 right now. They played some good offenses lately, but they ain't played any good defenses. So I don't think this game turns into what we've seen the last 2 weeks. I think neither of these teams probably hits 30. And I think high 20s probably gets it done. Can Texas score 28 against this Iowa State team? I don't know the answer to that. Yes, they can. Will they? We'll see. They shut down West Virginia. They slowed down Oklahoma better than anybody else has slowed down Oklahoma all year. Iowa State has been suffocating teams with their defense. So here we go. I can't explain it. I don't know why they're good. I don't know where Iowa State got the players where they've got the best defense in the Big 12, but they do, and they've been consistently good. So buckle up. It's going to be a hell of a time on Saturday. We'll talk to you next week. Actually, we'll talk to you in a couple of days. I don't know why I said next week. It's not the Ticket City locker room. It's the Orange Buds podcast. And we'll do this again in about 24 hours later.